Getting back to real life today, in a manner of speaking, although it's more the domain of the slaughterhouse, at least even today's slaughterhouse, as opposed to the Beis HaMikdash, than what's done at home. So we're on Mitzvah Kuf Mem Zayin 147, Shelo Nochal Chelev, that we're not allowed to eat certain fats of the animal. Shelo Nochal Chelev Behema Tahora, we're not allowed to eat these fats of a kosher species of domesticated animal, and not necessarily in biblical Hebrew, but in rabbinic Hebrew, behema. The word behema means domesticated animal, and the word chaya means wild animal. Shenemar kol chelev shor v'chesev v'ez lo sochelu. You shall not eat the chelev of any ox, of any sheep, and of any goat, and anything in that family, which are in fact the three species of kosher domesticated animals, and those may be offered as a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to wild animals, which may not. Kvar kasavti biser treifa b'seder mishpatim. So what are all these prohibited foods about? Kimiyos haguf kalila nefesh. The body is a vessel for the soul, and the soul, and so as such has intrinsic importance. Uvo tifal kosher pu'loseha. And as the purity of the soul and the proper actions of the soul are carried out through the body, so the body has to be in good shape. Lefi zechuso v'tov mizgo yavin derech hanefesh hachachma nesuna bo. So as good as the body is, that's better to understand the soul. It's a better vessel of the soul. V'yamin latzosa v'yelech achareha. And the more in tune you are, the healthier your body is, the more in tune you are with the soul, the better off you are. So it's important to make sure your body is in as good a shape as possible, so that your soul receives the proper outlet for its actions. So it's a Torah commandment that we have to be as healthy as possible. So why isn't there a gym in Lakewood Yeshiva? Good shayla. V'yadua hadavar mefursam bein b'nei adam ki lefia macholim yispael haguf b'vrius abacholi. So one of the most important ways to make sure that your body is healthy, or it could be the opposite as well, is by the foods that you eat. Ki b'sar haguf hazeh nifsad b'chol yom v'yom. Your body is deteriorating as you get older and you're you're going towards death. Lefia mezonos hatovim yishave bo basar bari v'tov. And the more you develop good flesh within your body, the more your nourishment can sustain the proper functioning of your body, the better off you're going to be in your as you age and deteriorate. And if you eat bad foods that are not good for you, then it's going to be the opposite. So it's God is doing good for us when He tells us to eat certain things and not to eat certain other things. So he's trying to tell us that these foods are bad for our body and soul, and we shouldn't eat them. So it's going to create bad moisture in our body. So again, this is from ancient medicine. We don't know exactly what this is talking about, but in any case, this is the way they understood it. So the basic rationalistic understanding of the forbidden foods in the Torah is that they're bad for you, and on some level, I guess, I don't know if we really accept this nowadays, because there are a lot of foods that the Torah prohibits, which are not necessarily bad for you. We assume nowadays, we don't, again, sometimes, like this Avraham Chinuch says, that his rationalistic explanations have their limits, and sometimes you have to turn to the Kabbalistic mystical explanation, so we don't really know why all these things are bad for us. We can't come up with rational explanations nowadays for all of them, so we assume it's more on a metaphysical level that these things are not good for the soul as opposed to the body. So this type of fat, when you eat it, it causes deterioration in the body and it's not good for you. So that's why the Torah prohibited this. So exactly, so just like you were saying before, there's another explanation which is given by many of the commentaries on the Torah when it talks about the prohibited nature of chelev, which is that these are the parts of the animal that were offered as a korban. So it could be, it has nothing to do with the fact that chelev is intrinsically bad for you, but that it's considered to be not nice because these parts belong to God. We always have to remember, even in regular animals, which are not offered as a korban, we must remember that this is the part of the animal that was burned on the altar that went to God, and it's not appropriate for us to take it from ourselves. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's because of the choicest part of the animal. The fattiest parts are the best meat. Maybe the Sefer HaChinuch wasn't written in the 13th century, it was written 40 years ago when all the doctors were saying how bad fat is for you, and now they were coming around, and the doctors now say that it's really the carbs, the simple carbs that are bad for you, not necessarily the fats. Again, I obviously shouldn't go to excess in anything, I'm just saying that fat isn't necessarily bad. Okay. Midine ha-mitzvah, what are the halachos? Ki ma she-perishu lanu zichronim livracha, she-ein eser chelev ela v'shalosh behemos she-bekasuv, shor v'chesev eiz. It's limited to the three animals that are given as explicit examples in the Torah, the text of the Torah itself, which are the ox family, the cattle family, the sheep family, and the goat family. V'ozan shalosh ben kasherus atrefos unavelos chayev al chelban. So it doesn't matter whether they're otherwise kosher or not. It doesn't matter whether they're slaughtered properly or they died, or they were found to be a treifa, they had a defect that renders it a treifa, still, you're liable for the full penalty for eating chalev if you eat the chalev of these animals. Obviously, you're not allowed to eat it anyway, because it wasn't shechted properly, if that in fact was the case. But still, you're subject to the additional level of prohibition, or the prohibition of kares, the higher level of prohibition that the eating chalev carries with it. If you eat the chalev, even if the animal otherwise was not kosher, as long as, of course, it was from a kosher species. If you eat the chalev of a aval shar mine behema b'chaya, bein tmeya bein tahora chel b'kivsar. The only time there's a difference between the halachos governing the chalev and the halachos governing the flesh is by these three kosher domesticated animals, which are the exhausted list of kosher domesticated animals. Flesh is exactly the same as the chalev. So, for example, if you eat the chalev of a pig, so you're not subject to the kares for the prohibition of eating chalev, you're subject simply to the lav of the malkos, of the lashes, subject to the prohibition of eating pig. There's no extra level of chalev that goes on. Same, of course, for taking an example of when you are allowed to eat chalev is...
A deer.
The chalev of, yes, exactly, a deer, a wild animal, a non-domesticated animal, or a giraffe, for example. So if you eat the chalev,
giraffe
is certainly kosher. Yes. So
it is kosher.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. So yeah. if you eat the chalev of a giraffe, that's 100% permissible lechatchila to eat that. That's not true, by the way. That we don't know where to shecht the giraffe. It's because it has a gigantic neck. You have a huge place you could shecht the giraffe, much bigger than most animals. The reason you can't eat giraffe is because it's too expensive. nothing to do with kashrus. It's 100% permissible to eat. It could definitely be processed in a manner that is permissible. You could have giraffe milk. It's you don't have to kill the giraffe to get the milk. Anyway. There's a chumrah that is based on a few levels of interpretation of the Chachmas Adam's interpretation of a shach on the Shulchan Aruch, where he suggests that you cannot eat, you know how you have to have a mesorah, you have to have a tradition about kosher birds, because the Torah doesn't tell you exactly how to determine what is a kosher bird and what is a non-kosher bird, so, and since we don't have, it just gives you a list of all the birds that are not kosher, so anything else in theory is kosher, so we don't know exactly the identities of all these animals on the list, and we don't know how to determine it exactly, although the Chazal do give us some simanim of what's certainly a kosher bird. Our psak really is that we only eat birds which are considered to be kosher based on a tradition we have about their kashrus. So there is an opinion that extends this to animals as well, even though we have exact signs in the Torah of exactly how to determine what animals are kosher and what animals are not kosher. Still, this minority view in the poskim feels that we should still only eat animals that we have a mesorah tradition that they're kosher, such as, obviously... cattle, sheep, goats, deer, things of that nature. But it's giraffe, something that the Jewish people never eat. We shouldn't start eating it just because it has the signs that are kosher. But that's... Chazanish was very into that. But that's not really the main opinion. Really, we hold that you could. You could determine based on the signs of kashrus whether to even nowadays to be and to eat an animal. V'chein ubar hanikra shlil. So an animal fetus, which is called a shlil. So hanimtza bimei shalosh behemos hanizkaros, if you shecht the mother and then you find inside a fetus, ein bo gamkein iser chelev, it is not subject to the prohibition of chelev at all. Lefikach amru hashochet, so hashochet is habeima matzaba shalil kol chelbomutar, you can eat all the chelev of this animal, it's only an animal that was actually born that begins to be subject to the prohibition of chelev. Bafilu mitzvah chai. So there's these famous cases in the Gemara that discusses when you shech the mother and you found a completely full term fetus. That's however much the gestation length of the equivalent of 9 months pregnant for humans. So that in that case, when you shech the mother and then you're chopping up the mother to eat it, and then lo and behold, out when you're slicing down the middle, out of the abdominal cavity jumps a little calf. And it's alive, yeah, because it's full term. It can survive outside the uterus already. So
a cesarean section,
right? Basically, yeah, a C-section cow. So after the mother was already shechted, so that even that, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, would not be subject to the prohibition of chela, because only an animal that's actually born for the mother while the mother is alive is subject to the prohibition of chela. There has to be two conditions. It has to be a full-term fetus and it has to be found alive. So that's one. A halacha midrabanan. That midaraisa, if you shecht an animal and you find this full-term fetus inside, then that animal does not need shechita at all. That animal is considered to be already shechted, even though it is alive. It's considered to be already dead. So let's say you want to eat this animal, deraisa, that on a deraisa level, then but that's only if it's hifris al gabe karka. That restriction, derabanan, only applies if it started walking around. If it jumped out of the uterus, it starts walking around, the people are going to... Then it grows up to be 5 years old, and people, all of a sudden, you chop off its head and you have it for dinner. Your neighbors are going to be like, the Cohens are going off the derech. They ate an animal without shechita. So that's that. So the Rabbanan, we require, as long as it walks on the ground, we require it to have a shechita. You have to cut its neck in the manner of a normal shechita in order if you want to consume it. How?
Midaraisa,
you don't. Midaraisa, you just have to, it doesn't matter how you kill it. So. But if even midrabanan, if let's say, if you're just cutting open the animal and you find it inside and so you're allowed to, and it doesn't come to start walking on the ground, then you're allowed to kill it, however. Yeah. So this is the opinion, the Sefer Chinuch is now presenting the opinion that if it's a full-term fetus and you shecht the mother and you find the full-term fetus alive, then the chelev is prohibited. The chayavin al of kares, you're subject to the full prohibition. Hare dino kishar habehemos ben yechelbo. So as soon as a full-term fetus and you found it alive, then it's just as any other animal regarding the chela. If you want to eat this animal, you have to take out all the chela properly. Wait. Zehudas harambam zechron al bracha. That's the Rambam's opinion. So it's a fetus that is full term. Then you're chayev fully for eating its chelev. Aval rube hamefarshim cholkim bezeh. That's the way I presented it originally. That the most commentators disagree with this. Amru de chelbo mutter. They say no. It's all fetuses are the same. Even it's not directly connected to the issue of shechita, shechting the mother, and if you're allowed to eat the fetus and when you find the fetus, etc. Any fetus, chelev is prohibited before the animal. If the animal is not born, then the prohibition never settles on the chelev of it.
Because not correct.
But divrei haGemara machrios kemosan. We said the Sefer Chinuch says that it makes more sense. Again, most authorities don't hold like the Rambam, so it says that the Gemara seems to indicate more in accordance with the opinion of most of the commentaries of the Hashkachan Reb Meir Reb Yehuda de Pligi bechalvo. Because in the Gemara, the discussion of whether the chelev of a fetus, even a full-term fetus, is prohibited or not, is subject to a machlokes between Rebbe and Rebbe Yehuda. And we normally paskin like Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda, the kaimel and kevasei, Yehuda sharilei. Rebbe Yehuda is the one who says that it's mutter, and we normally paskin in accordance with the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda when he argues with Rebbe Meir. So therefore, the Sefer HaChinuch feels that we should go according to the majority opinion, which is how we normally go with halacha anyway. We're not Yemenites, and we're not briskers that the Rambam trumps everyone else, that we go according with the consensus opinion amongst all the halachic authorities, and that is that the chelev is actually permitted as long as it is a fetus of some kind. So the
basic way we understand the heter, the prohibition, the permission of eating a fetus based on its mother's shechita is that normally, how many things do you have to cut in order to permit an animal to be consumed? Two, right? You have to cut the trachea and you have to cut the esophagus. So you have to cut, there are only two simanim, things that you can cut in order to prohibit, to permit it, and there are only two simanim, and they, you must cut both of them. There are only two, you, there is a minimum and a maximum. Okay, so we have a minimum and a maximum number of things you have to cut by a regular animal, which is the trachea and esophagus, and only the trachea and esophagus. You have to cut both and only those. And for a fetus, however, you have four options. You can either cut the trachea and the esophagus of the mother, or you can cut its own trachea and esophagus. So, for example, kilomar shim nitrafa imo shochta v'hashliel muter delav yerechimo. So, for example, if you held that only the shechita of the mother worked for the fetus, then let's say you chopped the mother's head off and you did not administer a proper shechita to the mother, so what would you say about the fetus? Fetus is not kosher because it's the only shechita that works for it is the mother, and you didn't shech the mother properly, so the fetus can never become kosher. But that's not true. That the it's an either or. That even if you still have a chance if you shechted the mother improperly to shech the fetus properly, and it still is kosher. This is the principle of uber lav yerech imo, that there's a machlokas in the Gemara, I mean regarding humans, as to whether a fetus is considered a body part of the mother or not, or it's considered an independent entity. And one of the ways this comes up, actually, is when a woman converts to Judaism while she's pregnant. So if you say that the fetus is just considered a part of the mother's body, so fine, of course, the conversion of the mother works for the fetus. But if the fetus is not considered halachically to be a part of the mother's body, so how could the conversion of the mother work for the fetus? When she goes into the mikvah, there's another. There's this thing inside of her that's not going to the mikvah. It needs to be. It's completely separated from the waters of the mikvah. How could it? How could the conversion work for the fetus? So the Gemara's answer is no. According to both opinions, even if you hold that a uber lav yerechimo, that even if the fetus is not considered to be a body part of the mother, so the immersion in the mikvah of the mother works for the fetus to convert to Judaism because, since that's a normal place that the uber is growing, hainu revise, since the fetus, that's where it has to be right now, so when it's under the surface of the water, it's in the mikvah, the fact that it's not actually touching the waters of the mikvah doesn't matter because it's in the normal place where it's growing and has to be at the time. So that only works. That only works, by the way, if the Bezdin that's administering the conversion knows that the woman is pregnant and has in mind that her conversion should work for the fetus also. But if the Bezdin does not know that the woman is pregnant, then the conversion does not work for the fetus. It has to be converted separately. So there was an issue, but that's exactly what I'm about to say. So there was an issue, I'm sure it's been more than once, where the Bezdin forgot to ask the woman if she was pregnant or not before she converted. And she was pregnant. I mean, there could be two situations. Either they just forgot to ask her and she forgot to tell them and she's everything is legitimate, she's married, whatever, and it's fine. And there are certain situations where perhaps she is an unmarried woman and the Bezdin, A, didn't think to ask her if she was pregnant or not, and B, she's in Paris to tell them that she's pregnant because she's not married. Right, so anyway, so either of these types of situations, for some reason the Bezdin did not know that the woman is pregnant during the conversion. So the question was, do they have to wait, do they have to wait till the baby is born in order for the baby to convert or not? So, in other words, when the pregnant woman is going to the mikvah to convert, does her conversion, her immersion in the mikvah, which has halachic significance, that's converting her right now, does that work for her and the baby as one package deal? Or is it sort of two separate things? That she could go to the, in other words, she's already Jewish. If she goes to the mikvah again, that has no halachic significance whatsoever. And could she go to the mikvah again on behalf of the baby? So this is a major machlokas, but of the poskim, whether that's actually that can actually be done or not. So this, I had a case apparently, and Rabbi Morgenstern was his name in Israel. He's one of the biggest students of Rabbi Yoshev. So he thought maybe it was permissible for the woman to go again and convert her baby, and he went to ask Rav Yosha to make sure. So Rav Yosha said, absolutely not. It has to be one conversion. If the immersion of the woman has no halachic significance right now, She's just going for sake of going into the mikveh again. She cannot go on behalf of the baby. The one conversion immersion has to go on both the mother and the baby at the same time. No, you don't drown it. The babies convert all the time. You go like this. You hold it. You hold it like this, and you go. There's someone, an adult, obviously, who goes into the mikveh and holds the baby, and you have to make sure the baby's clean, obviously, no chatzitzas, and you blow into the baby's face, and the baby holds its breath, dunk it for 1 second, and it comes out. I mean, I don't know if you could do this when the baby's 1 day old, literally. I mean, in theory, you could, halachically, but you have to wait until the baby has the reflexes to do that. And, no, you can convert the child at any age, but at the age of 13, then it then has the right 12. To renounce the conversion. If the baby converts in utero based on the conversion of the mother, then no. Okay. But if the baby converts when it's already born, then it has the right to renounce the conversion. Yeah. That's also a question, whether you have to give them the chance or not. If the child doesn't know that it's converted and you never tell it till it turns 16, so what does it mean? Does it mean at the 13th birthday or slightly before or whatever, it has a right to say, I'm not becoming bar mitzvah, I'm not going to be Jewish, that's it? Or is it the first time it finds out? At any time.
Right, right, about stuff like that, where somebody
right.
didn't know.
So if you don't know you were converted as a baby and you live as a Jew till age 30, and then, you know, on your parents' deathbed, they tell you, by the way, you were adopted, and you're really a convert. I shouldn't do this anyway. Everybody has to know their ichus. It's not proper to do this. But let's say somebody did this. So then it's a question as to whether the person could now renounce or not. So what if the woman... again, this is not a normal occurrence during pregnancy, but let's say the woman then becomes a nida deraisa on a biblical level during the pregnancy. She has some sort of bleeding that would render that would not endanger the fetus on the one hand, but render a nida deraisa on another hand, which was very uncommon, I would assume. But if she can now, her tvila now in the mikvah has halachic significance, then could that she have in mind that tvila with halachic significance should work for the baby also for its conversion? Again, major issues which are not easily resolved, but could be should umasha amrusham shim hifri sagabai karka devoy shchita. So as we said, if this animal, when it walks on the ground, this fetus, let's say it comes out, it's a C-section and it walks on the ground, so it needs shchita. Like I said, it's only an issue of appearances. They have to make sure that people don't think that there's a fully grown animal that's being eaten without shchita, even though it was really shechted because its mother was shechted. So it's not subject to the normal, since it was technically already shechted, so it doesn't really matter how you shecht as long as you give the appearance of being shechted. So for example, when you normally shecht an animal, you have to make sure that the knife is perfectly smooth and has no nicks in it. So that doesn't apply, according to this, if for an animal that only needs to be shechted, that for a C-section that needs to be shechted only derabanan, because it's only, you have to, just like to avoid the appearance of not eating it without being shechted, so it's only has to look like a shechita, doesn't have to be a full, valid halachic shechita, or any of the other halachos that would make it an issue to shecht this animal. And there are those who actually disagree with this. Some of the commentaries feel that since they require, it seems funny to us, once you require a shechita, even though it's only a rabbinic level shechita, you don't make a distinction between different types of shechitas. That seems off. So once you say it needs a shechita, it needs to have a proper shechita. In any case, it's subject to a disagreement amongst the commentators. But again, this doesn't really come up in contemporary industrial meat production. Ushlosha chalovim heim babehema shehein b'chiyuv kares. And there are three types of chalev in regarding a kosher domesticated animal, which are subject to the penalty of kari. Shal ha-kerev, that's on the stomach, v'shal ha-klayos, that's on the kidneys, v'shal ha-ksalim, on the flanks. Uperu shloshtan, what?
Flank.
Yeah. We have a pretty picture here.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. In the chinuch, what?
Yeah, wait, cross section of a cow. Never seen anything like
yeah.
that.
No. Fats of the stomach, see, you have fats on the stomach also. Cross section of a cow, you see? Oh, you can look at it later in more detail. The Gemara details exactly what each one looks like. So the only thing is that's really called chelev is a fat that sits on top of a layer of flesh. But if it's between two layers of flesh, it's completely surrounded by flesh, then that's not chelev and that's allowed. Why? That's on the flanks and not within the flanks. So if you take off the fat that's on the surface of the flanks, and you get and you take a chunk of that and you want to cook it, and you see that between the two layers of flesh there's a layer of fat, so that's permitted, even though that it's on the same area as the prohibited chelev, still that is considered to be okay. But the problem is also that these fats are really found in the rear half of the animal.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times we spoil Jews in America, we don't need to learn all the halachos because we just chop off the rear half of the animal and sell it to the goyim for treif, which, we have enough production that we don't really need the back half of the animal, although some of the choicest parts of meat are in the back half, and there's no real reason that we shouldn't be eating it. If there were more of a demand in the kosher consumer for these choicest cuts of meat, then we would have to get the menachrim, the people who are really expert in taking out all the chelev and the gid hanashet, back to work. What do you do? Lazy. Come on. Be a menacher of the back for us. Yeah?
So the gid is not so much of a problem as is the chaylev, then?
Well, the gid is a... Right. I mean, the gid is only the leg. Yeah. There are other parts of the... I mean, a little bit above, I guess, but... There are other parts of the animal, the top back, you know, around the spine, that shouldn't be a problem necessarily if you take out the chaylev.
Mm-hmm.
It's just annoying. It's hard. So in a contemporary meat production, you have lots of waste, lots of... you can give it to whoever you want, again, for the treif. So you don't need to be careful to get the entire animal's worth out of the flesh. The od yesh ba behema milvad elu ashlosha chutin ukrumos shasurin mishum chelev. They're all the types of, again, like fat marbling that could be chelev within the meat, and certain types of membranes which are also sort of to be a type of chelev. And it's a question as to whether this is included on a midaraisa, or maybe it's only derabanan. The Rambam says it's only the Rabbanas, the Minchas Chinuch points out. V'amr zichron levracha shatabachem habekiyem benikur hachelev ne'monin mal hadavar kozman shelo yatsu mechezkas bekiyusan v'chashrusan. In the olden days, you had people obviously reading the back part of the animal, and you had people who were experts. I mean, you have people who know how to do it nowadays also, but people who are experts in doing it, it's a lot, it's very annoying. You have to be very careful to scrape all the exact right fats away and leave only the permissible fats, and it's annoying. So even so, we don't assume that you need a mashgiach there, you know, from the local vad to make sure that this person is doing it correctly. That we assume that people who are muchzak already, that the community relies on in general and assumes is expert in removing all these fats. So as long as we see that, we assume that he's doing a good job until we know otherwise, basically. That if a piece of meat comes out and somebody says, from this butcher shop, and somebody finds chelev on it, then you have to second guess him. But before that, you don't have to. The chelev halev, the chelev hameyayin, and the fat of the heart and the fat of the intestines, veinadakin hamulpafin, those are the small intestine that's convoluted. Mutarin v'harehu kashuman. That's considered not like chelev, even though in certain terminologies you might call it chelev, but it's not the technical use of the word chelev, which only applies to the forbidden fats. No, that's only shuman. Shuman is permissible fat. Obviously, we have meat all the time that has fat on it. That's not chelev, that's shuman. Chutz me rosh ha-me'ayim ha-samuch la-keva. So the beginning of the small intestine is an exception to that rule. That's right next to the stomach. Shutchilas v'nei me'ayim. That's the beginning. Shetzarech adam ligur ha-chelev shalav. You have to scrape away the chelev there. U'imenu amr zichron levracha be'gemara. Reish me'aya be'amta bayar grera. You have to scrape the beginning of the intestines. V'yesh min ha-geonim she'amru. Some of the geonim say, explain this gemara in the opposite manner, actually. That's the rectum and not the beginning of the intestine. That's it's the opposite end, where the food exits the body. That's the end on the opposite. And it's all explained in the seventh parak of Maseches Chulin, which is a parak called Gid Hanasha and contains a lot of contemporary kashrus. It's found in that parak. It's a very exciting, fun parak. Benuheges b'chol makom u'v'chol zman. Bezcharim uvenikevos ve'over aleav achal kezayis chaylev ve'mezid loke b'shogig mevichatas kavua. And all places and all times, males and females. And if you eat an olive's bulk, of course, if you do it on purpose, you receive the penalty of lashes. And of course, if you do it on purpose, you also receive the penalty of kares. That's even more severe. It's one of the more severe prohibitions in terms of meat eating that we have nowadays. And if you do it accidentally, then of course we have a correspondence between what you're chayev kares for if you do it on purpose, then for if you do it accidentally, then you have to bring a korban chatos. But again, most of these things we don't have to worry about nowadays because we rely on the kashrus organizations to do it for us in the slaughterhouse, and we don't have to worry. Okay, mitzvah kuf mem ches is a related mitzvah, a very similar mitzvah. 148 is shelo nochal dam behema chayev of. We cannot eat the blood of a... Again, the previous mitzvah of chelev was restricted to only behema. It was only restricted to a domesticated animal. So here it has chayev of. Also, even wild animals and birds is also subject to the prohibition of dam, of blood. Shelo lechol dam behema chayev of. We should not eat the blood of wild animals, domesticated animals, as well as birds. Shenemar v'chol dam lo tochelu, do not eat any blood. V'nemar b'makom acher lo ufala behema, it says explicitly, v'chaya b'chol behema, in biblical Hebrew a lot of times, wild animals are also included in the term behema, even though in rabbinic Hebrew we keep them separate, with the term of distinguishing wild and domesticated animals. V'nichpelo hamaniya b'dam b'harmi mekomos b'torah, it's very common, it's mentioned many times in the Torah that we're not supposed to eat blood. Kvar kosavti ma sheni choshev al tzad hapshat bisuri hamacholos ba'azhoras treifa v'chelev. So I'm talking about what types of, why exactly is the reasoning, what's the reasoning behind these mitzvos of eating when we talked about, again, the only two mitzvos of prohibited eating things that you're not allowed to eat before in the Torah, which are the treifa, which is the animal with certain defects, and the chelev, which you just had in the last mitzvah. Shef shalomar badam od milvadra mizgoshu raha mezeg. That blood is not only bad for you and bad for these things that they understood in ancient medicine that were bad for your body if you ate certain things. So not only that, in addition to that, if you eat blood, it makes you crueler. Not only are you killing the animal to eat its flesh, which we're allowed to do, but maybe it's not the most geschmack thing. Not only that, you drink its life sustenance. It shows that you take its life not so soon. You have to appreciate the fact that this animal gave of its life so you could have a delicious cholent or steak. That the animals do have some sort of soul, not exactly the same as a person's soul, which is called a nefesh sichlis, an intelligent soul, but it has a life soul to it, so it's not proper to drink its life sustenance. Gam nira osam sheish anafshem bechina lishomer minifol b'achasab chosim uvikzas dvarim acherim. So animals try to avoid things, bad things happening to them. They have enough knowledge and enough instincts. Maybe you would call it an instinctual soul as opposed to an intelligent soul. So it can't make decisions. It goes based on its instincts. But in any case, since it's more alive than, say, plants, so it's improper to eat the blood. The Haramban zichrona livracha, kasa b'tam hadam, ki yadua shanechal yashuv beguf ha'ochel. That the something that's eaten, you are what you eat. It becomes part of your body when you digest it. It helps you build cells and stay alive. That you're going to get a little animalistic by eating the blood. That if you eat the soul of the animal or the real life sustenance of the animal, so it's going to make you more animalistic and less human. The reason is that it's not proper for a living soul to consume another part of something that's more indicative of the fact that this being has some sort of instinctual soul as opposed to the flesh, which is more of a pure bodily thing. Again, it's hard to understand in a purely rational manner, but whatever. This is the way it is. Also, the blood, you can say, is part of what's poured on the altar, that it's the nefesh. It's understood that, yeah, okay, it's still... We should keep in mind, I guess, in terms of a more rational understanding that might appeal to us, we should just keep in mind that the animal gave up its life for you, and you shouldn't eat, you shouldn't... So, midine ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah, v'asha'amr zichronim livracha, shedam dogim v'chagovim, shkotzim urmasim v'dam ha'adam, ein chayavin olav mishum dam. So, there are a few types of blood that are not subject to the full penalty of eating blood, which, again, is going to be kares. That is... blood of locusts, grasshoppers, fish, insects, and humans. So of all those things that we just mentioned in the list, the only things that you're allowed to eat, that you're lichatchila, that are permissible to eat, are fish and the kosher types of grasshoppers and locusts. Grasshoppers, I would say. So we're allowed to, so then it should be, since we're not chayev on them, since you're not liable for kares for the eating of their blood, you would think that eating them is mutter lechatchila. You're allowed to eat the blood even from the outset. Avafilu knaso bakli, even if you're not just, you know, take the whole fish, you kill it, and then you cook it right away, even including all the blood that's in the fish. So that for sure would be mutter, but you think even if you drained the blood from the fish and you drank that separately from a cup, it's a little gross, but if you you drink it in a cup, so it should still be mutter. Why? Vishu sheyehe nikar lakol shehu dam dogim. So there is a restriction on pouring fish blood into a cup and drinking it straight. Kemo she'amru ba'gemara sheyeh b'chli k'tzas mikaskesei hadag. So there has to be some scales floating in the fish blood in the cup. So everybody who looks at it will realize that it's fish blood and not animal blood. This is one of the prohibitions that Chazal instituted because of what we call marisayin, that it looks like you're doing something wrong if you're drinking a cup of blood, even though you know it's fish blood, but not everybody who's looking is going to necessarily know that it's fish blood, yeah.
Actually, we happen to get some almond milk.
Yeah.
Remember vaguely, there's some, this is because had a few flakes of almonds floating around in the almond milk, similarly?
Exactly, that's the same prohibition, that you're not allowed to cook meat in almond milk, because it looks like you're cooking meat with milk, but there, if you put some almonds in the dish, then it's permissible because everybody's going to know that it's almond milk and not real milk.
Watching.
What?
Who's watching?
As we have a principle that anything that Chazal answered because of Maris Ayin is prohibited even b'chadri chadarim, even in a bank vault if you're doing your cooking and you know nobody else is coming in. Aval dam hadogim ha'asurin asur. Obviously, if you have lobster blood, lobsters have blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So if you have lobster blood, then that's obviously that's prohibited. Lefishu kachalev behema tameyash asur min hakal shebinu shemachal yotze min hatame tame. So we have a principle, which is that something that is derived from a prohibited species is prohibited. So obviously, if you milk a non-kosher animal, then that milk is absolutely prohibited because it's derived from a non-kosher species. You don't say, oh, this is a new thing. This is not the flesh of the animal. This is milk. But kemoshim atzinu shasra Torah beitza sayana l'fishi yotza min hatomei. So the Gemara says, the Torah says when it lists the prohibited species of birds, so it says one of them is bas hayana, the daughter of the ostrich. So what does it mean, the daughter of the ostrich? The ostrich is prohibited. Obviously, the offspring of the ostrich is prohibited. That's not a question. So it means the egg. Even though the egg is not the real animal yet, an egg from a non-kosher species of bird is absolutely not kosher. It's absolutely non-kosher. Prohibited. No, of course, no.
But
of course.
You can't eat ostrich eggs?
Yeah, you cannot eat. You may not eat ostrich eggs. It's not not an issue.
How about
so
honey
is a good question. Honey is a good question. Either because it's gzeiras hakosov that the Torah gave a specific exemption for honey because it says talks about dvash in the Torah, even though mostly it's talking talking about date honey. But even so, there are times when it's talking about bee honey. So since the Torah is mentioned explicitly, so it's permissible. And the others say because the other reasoning that's given is because
basically, it's just concentrated.
It's concentrated nectar, and right. It's not really derived from the body of the bee, even though the bee does, have an enzymatic reaction.
It makes it just like.
Okay, but whatever it is, we know that it's permissible because Jews have always been eating it, and nobody says that it's a problem. It's explicit in the Gemara that it's permissible. So that's not really an issue. But the other things, there are things that are problematic also, like shellac. Shellac is derived from a different type of insect. So,
but you don't eat shellac.
Sometimes you do. It's made for certain coatings of food.
Like
confectioner's glaze, I believe. That's also used for coating medicine. Yeah, but medicine is much more easy. It's much easier to be lenient because you're not actually eating it. But in terms of foods that are made with shellac, that could be a problem.
Yeah, candy glaze.
So Rav Moshe Feinstein said that the OU gives extra to it based on a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who said it was similar to honey. But I think, again, I don't know the exact metzias, shall we say, about shellac. They point out that Rav Moshe was given false information, and the process that the bugs that make shellac is not analogous to the process that bees make honey. But the OU continues to give extra. They feel that Rav Moshe's tshuva is still applicable. But what you might call the Mahadrin, shall we say, quote-unquote, kashrus organizations, generally do not give a hechsher to anything made with shellac, such as Twizzlers.
No.
Twizzlers have confectioner's glaze on them, so you'll notice that if you go to a Haimash store in Brooklyn, so they will have Twizzlers where they slap... It's a type of candy, strawberry-flavored candy. It's like a type of licorice, yeah. So they have a lot of times... the Twizzler is with a hechsher, another hechsher slapped on it. That, we'll say a special brand with a Jewish name of these Twizzlers with a different hechsher. The reason being that that's a special production of Twizzlers that are made without the shellac glaze, that are made without the confectioner's glaze, because they feel that it's not a real hechsher, that the confectioner's glaze should be prohibited.
So what bug makes shellac?
It's called a lack bug.
Lack bug, yeah, right.
Lack bug?
Yes, L-A-C bug.
Oh, but non-kosher eggs are not so common. That's why we're allowed, in other words, as opposed to milk, for example, we're not allowed to buy milk from Goyim because they might have mixed in some non-kosher milk into the kosher animal milk. Maybe nowadays, again, it may be different because of the government supervision. But eggs, there was never a prohibition to buy from Goyim because eggs are usually recognizable. Everybody knows what a chicken egg looks like. And it's not a real issue. Scrambled eggs are not allowed to buy from Goyim. If they're selling in the store, for example, pre-scrambled eggs, and it has to have extra, if it doesn't have extra, they're not allowed to buy it.
Can you do
the dam adam, human blood, asaru chachomim ipnei maris ha'ayin, that human blood is prohibited because, again, the it gives the appearance of doing something wrong by the fact that you drain someone's blood, a cup of blood, and you're drinking that, it looks like you could be animal blood. So that's prohibited, mid the rabbanan. That's why, by the way, the blood libel, of course, made no sense, because we're not allowed to eat human blood in any form.
Well, that's just the rabbanan, that's
the
blood.
It's only the rabbanan, but Orthodox Jews are just as stringent about the rabbanans as we are, almost as stringent about the rabbanans as we are the raisos. Ulfikach, amru, dam, shebena, shinayim, motito, bolus, let's say you have a cut in your mouth and you want to drain the blood, so you're allowed to lick your gums and get the blood out because it doesn't look like you're doing anything wrong because nobody's going to see. It's impossible to notice that you're doing that. So if there's blood on your finger, you're not allowed to lick it off. But if there's no blood visible on your finger right now, so then you can put your finger in your mouth so that any blood that comes out immediately goes onto your tongue. You could do that, yeah. Vishala pasp, let's say you have bleeding gums and you bite into a piece of bread and then you take the bread out of your mouth and there are some red remnants on it. So goro me allah v'ochel hapas, you just get rid of, you scrape off that blood, you can eat the rest of the bread. But you're not allowed to eat that blood because it looks like you're doing something wrong, even though that's only a prohibited midrabanan. Yeah.
What if your dental hygienist is watching the blood, actually? You know, maybe you're, you know.
But she's watching, in other words, but she's watching it come out at the exact same time that it's going.
All right.
Well, it stays in the mouth, we assume, is not going to be a problem. It's an interesting point.